This week is a rad week with Barely Available coming on, talking about his art journey. And yes, we have something in common. We both lived in Fresno. We don't brag about it. We're pumped that he gets to come on and talk about all things Barely Available and where he's headed. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It supports the show. It's free. It's awesome. We love you forever. If you want even more, you can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. And if you want even more, you can go to patreon.com/toysontap and join the Patreon. Get extra content, all the good stuff. Now let's jump into this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Hey, I'm pumped that you're on. I don't think I've ever met you. I'm Abe. Yeah. This is Toys on Tap.
Awesome, dude. I'm Jason.
You've been at DesignerCon. Mm-hmm. I've seen you at DesignerCon. And this is finally when it's happening. I've wanted to have you on for so long, and we're finally here.
Grad, dude, I'm glad to do it. I've enjoyed listening to the show. I think the first time I heard it was probably Dollar Slice. You had John on, right?
Like a holy moly,
long time ago.
Yeah,
yeah, he's turned me on to the show, and so I've listened off and on since then. So you do a good job, man.
Heck yeah, thank you so much. I mean, we're gonna dive into all things. But before we do that, you got to introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name's Jason, and I'm known as Barely by a lot of people. I'm the owner, creator, designer behind Barely Available. This is a passion project of mine that I've been doing now since 2018 on April Fool's Day. Ooh. And it's been a really, really fun ride, man. I've enjoyed doing it and being part of the community.
I mean, I have so many questions, but we got to start specifically with the name Barely Available. Little fun pun with wordplay. Mm-hmm. Where's that coming from and why the focus on, I mean, bears in general?
Sure. So not to belabor the story, because I know I've shared it off and on over the years, but as a kid, I spent a lot of time with my grandparents, and my grandpa and I used to watch The Jungle Book, the old animated Jungle Book.
Heck yeah.
And I thought it would be so dope to have a bear as a friend, you know? They just look so, you know, fun. And as a kid, I'm like, oh, it'd just be fun to wrestle with a bear and cuddly and whatever. My grandpa was like, yeah, totally. But remember, they could rip you apart with one paw. And I was like, oh. You know, and that just yeah. A juxtaposition of looking cuddly and cute and this restrained power. But when bears need to get down to it, they got all this power. And that just stuck with me through my life, and just realizing there's so many different kinds of bears, and all over the globe, there's different regional bears, and from a, you know, panda bears, to sun bears, sloth bears, grizzly bears, just fascinated me my whole life. And so when I had the opportunity to kind of make my first character, I was like, oh, I think I could really nail together some simple shapes that I could iterate on using a bear. And that just kind of was it. And then Barely Available. At first, my character, I wanted to call him Barely.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a fun name. And then trying to be like, here he is, like he's available, and not realizing that it was like, sounded like, oh, it's barely available. Like you can't get it.
Yeah.
Which was funny when I first started doing resins. I was like, I said, this is a kind of a hobby turned small business. I wasn't able to do them like tons at a time, just was getting them and I would drop them and they would sell. And people are like, oh, barely available. Ha ha. I can't get your stuff. I'm like, I didn't mean it that way, but that's kind of funny that's working out that way.
That's rad. I mean, the stories of people who get names that they actually choose or like really like, those are like, what I make under is Yucko Toys, and I don't mm-hmm. love it, but I'm kind of stuck with it at this point. And so yeah. To hear that you got to like choose Barely Available as like your thing.
Yeah. Hey,
congrats, man.
Thanks. You know, I almost didn't, cause I had my Instagram first. I, you know, started as a collector.
Yeah.
You know, and it was called Collect and Create because I wanted to show stuff I collected and stuff I made. And then I was like, is it worth changing the name? Is it, you know, like I'm not brash enough to be like, I'm going to make a business out of this. It was just a hobby thing. And so a couple people were like, no, totally do it. That's a cool name. Barely Available. That's fun. You know, I'm like, okay. And so I switched it. And then now there's old posts I have where my name was hashtagged or at mentioned in it. When people go to it and then somebody else has taken up that moniker that does like crafting or something.
Yeah.
And so they're like, what the heck is this? I'm like, that's not me. But some of the old stuff is still out there.
Yeah. I mean, let's walk it back. The fact that you do toys or something that's toy related means that toys had a huge part of your growing up.
Yeah, man.
Let's walk it back to when you first started getting toys as a kid. What toys are you playing with? What's on TV? What are you collecting? All those things.
Yeah. So I was born in the late 70s. So I lived through the He-Man, Thundercats, G.I. Joe. And that was all stuff that had my attention growing up. You know, especially G.I. Joe was readily available at stores. So when, you know, I'd get them for Christmas and things, I'd have all these little action figures, so much so that I'd have duplicates. So I'd take one of the figures out and just beat the crap out of it and have battle damaged one. So it's like, this is the guy that went through the battle and now he's going to the hospital and he gets healed up and whatever. But yeah, just really loving I loved the Masters of the Universe stuff, how you could pop the arms off and swap them out with different things. Cause they just had those little ball joints that you could swap them. And, you know, Ninja Turtles, even when those came around, I collected some of those. It's kind of towards the end of where it started at my age being like, don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
All these toys and you know,
yeah.
But, you know, so just having lots of that kind of stuff as a kid, just being fascinated with it. Then just like kind of kit bashing my own figures, trying to mash stuff together as a kid, not knowing that's what people would eventually, you know, be calling kit bashing things but just pulling stuff apart and kind of Frankenstein monstering them, if you will, and making my own stuff. I just always loved having collectibles, things with me because, up through sixth grade, we moved to a different house every year. So I changed schools every year all the way through sixth grade. So like my toys and stuff stayed with me when I didn't know if like, oh, I got to make new friends. What a hassle. Cause we're just going to move in a year again. So I just like really leaned into comics and toys. You know, Batman was a huge influence on me, especially the 66 Adam West Batman.
Yeah.
As a kid, just watching that after school on TV. Stuff like that.
I remember seeing that movie with Adam West for the first time, and he pulls out the shark spray.
Shark repellent, yeah.
As a kid, I thought that was the coolest thing. You go back and watch it, and you're like, oh, this doesn't look great.
Yeah, it's so campy and just goofy. And then when they're running with that giant bomb and stuff, you know, in there. And it's just a goofy, but it had me all the way. I was in the bag stuff all the way as a kid.
Tell me about coping with the fact that you're moving every year and like is it military? Is it just moving? What's up?
My dad was always like looking for the bigger, better deal.
Yeah.
Different houses, you know, renting houses. And then towards the end of that, my parents divorced and then moving our last kind of move, which was like in sixth grade, was from a house to an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just me and my sister and my mom.
Yeah.
And so we kind of stayed there up until middle of high school when I moved from one city to another. But so the moving was just my dad kind of being out looking for a, you know, more space, better house than, you know, to rent, and didn't really pay much mind to like what it did for us kids getting upheaval every year. But you know, he was looking for, oh, this house is bigger. This one has a little shed out back. This one has a 2-car garage. This one's 4 bedrooms, not 3 bed. You know, just always just going. So real no rhyme or reason other than like, oh, this is.
Godzilla!
It looks like Godzilla, but due to international copyright laws, it's not.
Still, we should run like it is Godzilla!
Though it isn't.
The newest kaiju is about to stomp its way onto the scene.
What's that smell?
Meet Barfy. The sludge-spewing kaiju inspired by the lizard we all know and love. Coming from the brain of Bootleg Toy Co. and brought to life by Toys on Tap. This monstrosity will come in at a massive 6 inches in 3 styles. 1 blank white and 2 colorways exclusive to Toys on Tap. The first colorway is Barfy's natural colors. And the second is... That's right, Reptar colorway.
Now that's entertainment!
This monstrosity will arrive in a clear box with a backer that doubles as a backdrop for your figure. Barfy arrives on the scene soon. You don't want to miss this, but remember, stay out of the way of the sludge.
Bigger and better, I guess, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, looking back now, you're able to probably see that, like, you're pushing into comics and toys and and all that stuff. And mixed with like possible trauma and stuff kind of now makes like good toys.
Yeah. It really caused me to kind of make my own fun and think my own ways and invent my own ideas, you know, and just kind of play, you know, as a kid playing out there and inventing stories and just, you know, I think allowed me to think maybe the way my mind is now. Yeah. Probably isolated a lot as a kid to where now it's like, I feel that socially awkward side of things, you know, but I'm naturally inclined as an introvert anyway. So it's like, my wife and I always joke, cause D-Con's really the only like big con we go to every year. Mm-hmm. She comes with me and she knows I'm totally introverted. And so then she sees me out there and I'm just like meeting and talking and hanging out with people and whatever. She knows as soon as we hit that hotel, I'm just gonna
just gone. Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to recharge for the next day, but I wouldn't change it. It's so much fun.
We're going to walk it all back and forth, but how many days do you think it takes for you to fully recharge from something like D-Con?
Oh gosh.
Is it like a week?
I would probably say I'm a little bit of in a fog that next, you know, week, that Monday through Friday, but it's good. Like this last, you know, the last few years where it was in Anaheim, I live about an hour and a half there. So I didn't have a ton of travel so I could get home and start relaxing or spend a little bit extra day down Disneyland or do something fun like that.
Yeah.
And then this last year though, in Vegas, you know, we stayed an extra day. And then drove back home. But yeah, that next week is just kind of foggy, taking things slow, you know, takes a little bit of time for me to kind of re-energize. But it's weird because I feel a good energy from the show. It's such a positive experience that it's not like, I think if it was something that I dreaded, the recovery would be a lot harder, but it's nice. And then, you know, keeping conversations going through text or Instagram or something the rest, like the next week, kind of lets you come like on a slow letdown, I guess.
That's crazy. As you are growing up, when does art start to, you've kind of finished the moving and all that stuff. Toys are slowly starting to be like more undercover. Mm-hmm. When does art start to creep in?
That's a great question. I always was drawing as a kid at home, as getting into junior high and high school. But the schools I went to, you know, picking electives and stuff. I also loved music. And so I played music I did 1 year of college. I played music up into college, played a lot of jazz, saxophone, stuff like that. Then I started getting into like bands and playing with local bands and doing small tours. But never stopped drawing. I always had like sketchbooks, would doodle. Probably in middle school, a buddy of mine and I made our own comic book. It was this goofy dude we called Gatling, who got in a horrific accident, had his arm replaced with a Gatling gun, and, you know, just like stupid kid stuff. And
yeah.
And, you know, it was like a mishmash because the characters kind of looked very, you know, that 80s X-Men body style with very influenced by like G.I. Joe cartoon kind of aesthetic too. And that was kind of our thing. And I would do a lot of the drawing and then we'd collaborate on the story and he would color them and stuff like that. And so we had all these little mini comics we would make for ourselves and stuff.
Awesome. I mean, what a funny thing, Gatling. Mm-hmm. That if that doesn't speak to like what happens in a boy's brain as he's growing up, that is right. And then we kind of get older. Do you go to school for art? What does that look like? Do you just go into the workforce?
So that's great, that question. Yeah, I did 1 year of college and then I realized, man, I have no idea what I want to do, but it's not this.
Yeah.
So I took some time off. I went and worked up at this camp in the mountains for a little over a year and just drew a lot and canoed around the lake and just kind of just took time to myself because I realized like I just went right out of high school into college and I didn't like school. And there's benefit to school, but college isn't for everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. And so then I took that little bit of time off and then came back down. I lived in Fresno and I came back down into Fresno and just worked, you know, and saved money and tried to figure out what I wanted to do. Really started getting into screen printing. Mm-hmm. I worked in a screen print shop and ended up getting a 4-color screen print press. So I would make shirts for local bands and my band, 3- and 4-color print posters, show posters, you know, different things like that. And just teaching myself the early ons, I got a beta release of Photoshop back in the day. I think it was Photoshop 6.
Yeah.
And so I started trying to learn some of that and started, you know, learning how to hand code websites in HTML, you know, going to the library and getting books because this was really pre-internet being the place to go. There was no YouTube University as we like to say at the time.
So I have so many questions real quick.
Go for it.
I mean, Fresno, I'm born and raised from Fresno. I now live in San Diego.
Nice.
I'm assuming the camp is somewhere around Hume Lake up by the Redwoods.
That's where I worked, yeah.
Okay. That's crazy. Doing all that and then band, I mean you got to tell me the band, we got to know what band you were in.
This was in the late 90s. I was in a little hardcore band called Tenfold. That we played a lot of. There was a place called Cub of Joe that had a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And then we played some different stuff down in Tower District, like this club, little club called the Elements Club. My buddy Wayne ran that club. So I was in that band. I would sit in and play with just random, you know, band. People just knew I liked to play. So I'd fill in with random bands. I was in another band called Nothing Rhymes with Orange. This other band called Disconnected. Like pop punk bands. But yeah,
it's pretty crazy. About 6 years later, me and friends of ours are going to places like Cup of Joe. And there was one that was called Big Game and then The Exit and just seeing underground bands and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. There's almost some overlap there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You start drawing, you get into screen printing, which is the like such a head dive into art.
Oh yeah.
Especially that, and then mixing it with band posters, making posters probably that other people aren't making.
Yeah.
What does that spark in you? What does that kind of ignite as you're like, because that's creativity on steroids.
Yeah, it's super fun. And it just, the place I work, the screen print shop, this guy, I can't remember the name of the shop anymore, but the owner, his name was Chuck Williams. And he really noticed that I was asking a lot of questions. So he let me on breaks. And sometimes when certain projects were slower in the shop, he let me go sit in the art department and really pick the brain of our artists there and learn more about Photoshop, which made me think, oh man, I think I want to do this graphic design stuff. And so I just, you know, sucked up whatever I could from there. And then I'm like, I'm going to try checking out college again. And that's at Fresno State. And at the time, the way the program was for, like, they called it multimedia and design. It was, they gave preferential treatment to upperclassmen, and you had to take like class one before you could take two. But if you missed getting into class one, it's another year before you could get it. It's not like they offered it every semester, 'cause it was so new. So I'm like talking to a counselor, and they're like, yeah, you could probably get through this in about 5 years. And I'm like, forget that action. Yeah. And so there was a little school in Fresno called Institute of Technology.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, a lot of these jobs I'm looking at, they want to see a portfolio, which I had, and then they want you to have a degree or a certification. And I didn't have either one, but the technology school offered a certification. So I'm like, oh, 18 months, I can be done. I can do that for 18 months, do school, learn Photoshop, Illustrator. Then it was Flash, Macromedia stuff, you know, at the time. And so I'm like, I'm going to jump in. And then about 6 weeks into going to school there, they're like, actually, you know this program really well. Would you like to teach night classes? We'll, and we'll exchange that, you know, we'll like really pretty much wipe your tuition out. And so I'm like, sweet. So I can get all the certs I want. I can make a little bit of money, not owe any tuition, so I can leave the school without owing anything. And then kind of have the certifications I want to kind of move on. So I ended up doing that. And then after 18 months, some buddies of mine, one guy was transitioning out of one job, and there was a big a department store called Godshocks in Fresno that was just like a local, like Central Valley department store. It wasn't like some big thing like JCPenney or whatever.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now functions. Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
He was an art director there, but was wanting to leave. So he left there. Another buddy of mine transitioned out of a job he had, and we started a production company. And so we started doing video production, motion graphics, web design, graphic design, you know, consulting clients. And I did that for about 8 years, you know, and kept that, honing my design and animation skills and things like that. But it was mostly for clients. So, you know, the kind of characters and the fun world kind of went off to the side, you know, to help me kind of make money. But it really taught me how to get, keep moving on things, to iterate on things, how to, you know, explore things I hadn't, you know, known how to do, jump into new technologies. You know, if a client was like, hey, we really want something like this, do you guys know how to do that? And we're like, well, let us check in and get back to you, and like learning new things rather than just going, no. And that's what I think gave me the inspiration to jump into, like, when I started trying to learn 3D, you know, and how to 3D design and sculpt in 3D, and get a 3D printer and start doing that. It's that desire to like learn new things and know that like, oh, I can just keep adding these kind of skill sets and not be a master of anything, but kind of a jack of all trades kind of idea. Yeah. And, I don't know if I'm rambling on from your
question. No, this is perfect. I'm all about this.
Cool, man.
That's, I mean, so much goes into that, right? And it's like you're throwing out just Fresno related stuff like ITT and stuff, which is crazy to hear. But how are you in the midst of doing all this stuff and now working possibly for clients and doing things that is kind of depriving you of life, because that's what clients seem to do. How are you still keeping that creativity alive? Are you still doing art? What does that look like for you and during this time?
During this time, I was doing a lot more music, you know, because I spent so much time behind the computer and designing during the day, that doing some of that art at home, I let it feel like an extension of work, and music feel like that. So I kind of, in my free time, did a lot of music, and in that kind of got reconnected with an old friend who had, you know, ended up, fast forward, became my wife, you know. And then when we started having kids, it's like, oh, going out and playing shows and doing all that isn't as feasible time-wise when kids start showing up. So I kind of stopped playing live music and got back into illustrating and stuff, and having that time with a little one that just maybe doesn't need your interaction, but needs your attention. Like, you need to be aware and be around them. It's kind of the advent of the iPad at the same time. And I'm like, oh, mobile illustrating, like in my hands. I can sit with the baby who just needs to be held a little bit and prop the iPad on the couch and illustrate and stuff like that. So I started redeveloping a love for illustrating and kind of character creating, and just letting my mind, you know, doodle. And some of that stuff is just scribbles and doodles of messes all over, but it's just my brain letting stuff out. And you know, and then at the same kind of the same time, I sold my third of the business that I started with my buddies, because they wanted to go into more kind of curriculum kind of writing and video supporting curriculum. And I wanted to stay leaning into motion graphics and animation. So I got hired by an ad agency in Orange County and worked there for a few years. And that really was great for working on illustrations and vector illustrations, and working in Illustrator and being able to work fast and turn stuff around in an agency environment, and just kind of hone those skills on ideation and iterating new versions of things, and working in a design system where, you know, a client doesn't want an animated video who looks like 10 people worked on it. It has to be cohesive and has to tell a good story. And then that led me to getting recruited to go work at LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked, they had acquired a business called, it used to be called lynda.com, which was an online education. And I went to work there as a graphic designer and became a supervisor and then a department manager, and did that for a number of years. And that's really where my wife, I'm going from making and creating every day to managing those who do. My wife was like, if you don't figure out some way to get that creative energy out, you're going to like end us all. Like, you need to figure something out. And that's really her, you know, she was much kinder than that, but I know what she was saying. And that's really what gave me the push and the freedom to really kind of start exploring character design, 3D printing, and then ultimately resin casting, which is how I started into doing stuff with Barely.
That's crazy. First dabbles in doing, I mean, it's tough to hear the reality of like, oh, you got to find something to be, to get this creative juices flowing or to get them out. Cause that really just opens the door to everything.
Right.
And so how do you start to settle on resin casting? This puts us at probably about 2017, 2018, right?
Yeah. Right about there.
Mm-hmm. So how do we settle on that? Cause that's even, I'm always interested in this because no one searches that immediately.
Yeah.
We kind of like dabble in everything until we come across it. So how do you find it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're dead on. You know, I had Instagram, look at following artists I really like, different things that I like. At the time I was a Funko collector, because it was something that I could go pick up at Target for $8 at the time. Not that price now.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then when I'd read articles, a name kept coming up, Reese O'Brien, mm-hmm. and different, you know, he's an artist there and then became a creative director. So I would follow him and saw stuff that he did with his company, BIMTOY. And he did these, the unusual cause of death ghosts. Like, they were these little hand sculpted things. And there was like all these little ghosts who died really random ways. Kind of like that video, Dumb Ways to Die. Did you ever see that?
Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of silly stuff like that. And I really liked his stuff. And then he started doing this character Tiny Ghost, and a lot of people in the collector scene know about that ghost. But he had a friend, if I'm remembering the chronology right, another friend of his at Funko helped him get his idea from sketch to 3D. And then he was like, I'm pouring resin copies of this. And I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
What does that mean? So watching his process a little bit and how he made a silicone mold and poured resin, I was like, whoa. And I had this, for lack of a better term, epiphany for myself where I went, he's just a dude in his house using his hands to make a thing. It wasn't a factory. It wasn't, you know, this overseas toy production thing, which had always been stuff where like, oh, toys get made overseas. Mm-hmm. Collectibles get made overseas. And you can't do that on your own, to realizing, oh, wait, hold on. If he can do it, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying like, oh, man, he's like this amazing art director. All of a sudden, I'm going to be this amazing art director. I just like, he just, but the idea that he made a thing, I can have the tenacity and the drive to figure out how to make a thing. And he was kind to answer a couple of questions I had asked him, just as this fan of his stuff. And he's like, oh yeah, I got it at Michael's or something. He got some silicone.
Alumalide or something.
And then just, poured resin cast. So I was like, okay, well, I'd already had this idea. I thought I was just going to be able to make my stuff on my 3D printer, because I'd had a little filament 3D printer at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, this takes forever. There's so much sanding. No one's going to want these, like I'm not going to sell this stuff. It's just going to be stuff that I'm going to make for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I saw how quick you can resin cast something, I'm like, wow, I could actually probably make some resin cast figures and do, for me at the time, it was like just doodling on them. I have let me grab real quick. It's right
Heck
here.
Yeah.
What I did is I made, this actually has the number 0 on the bottom, because it was my first one that I was like, I'm going to cast it in white resin and then I'm going to draw all over it with Sharpies.
This is, so that early on.
Yeah.
Is the first bear.
That's the, yeah, you can see it says like number 0, and it's got some like little putty on it. So it'll stand on my shelf when every once in a while we get little earthquakes and stuff likes to jump off the shelves. So I try to putty it on there, but this was the first, so there's one more resin cast that was before this, but this was the first one I was going to draw on. So I was like, this is my tester. I'm going to write 0 on it.
Yeah.
And then I did this with Sharpies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I posted it on my Instagram account. Mm-hmm. And I was like, trying something new. And I had a handful of people say, sign me up for one. Like, if you do more, let me know. And I'm like, okay. Thanks for the kind words, guys. And then they kept thinking people were just being nice.
Yeah.
And, because of self-deprecation is my special skill. Mm-hmm. And but they hit me up again and go, hey, did you do any more of those? Like, are you going to actually do something? I'm like, oh, maybe I can do a handful. And then I ended up selling, I think probably about 10 or 11 of them. And I was like, oh, this is so fun. And I said, but this takes forever to draw on these things. Cause it's just, you know, and then it's messy. And I'm like, what would it look like? That gave me enough of a push to go, what would it look like to try to do this overseas, like to actually get a toy produced? And that started a little bit of a journey for me of a lot of research and a lot of people going, oh man, you're not going to be able to make anything less than 1,000 run. Like, you, they're going to want you to run 1,000 figures and it's going to cost you, you know, $10,000-$15,000. I'm like,
yeah,
no way.
People just talking out of their butts.
Yeah. And sometimes people talking out of actual experience, but it was dated experience.
Yeah.
And you know, more and more people, as much as more and more people here got into resin casting and doing art that way, and so they were sharing information and finding cheaper ways to do things, I really think that factories over there were doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting more and more people were getting involved, processes were getting cheaper,
Yeah.
You know, so I just kept making phone calls, you know, Alibaba and different things, you know, talking to people who'd done certain things like Connor at Abominable Toys, you know,
Trump. Yeah.
Yeah. I see you got your popsicles back there.
Heck yeah. Show. That whole set.
Yeah. They're awesome. You know, and just asking him, hey, and I went to him with information I had. I said, these are some stuff I've gathered. I know you've done stuff. Does this seem legit? So I didn't ask him to give me any secret sauce. I just said, here's what I've collected informationally. Does this look legit? And he was like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, oh, I've actually talked to those people before. And, you know, he just gave me some like thumbs up, thumbs down on a couple of things and all through Instagram. And so then I got in touch with this factory over there that they only required me to do 500 figures.
Still a lot, but okay.
It's still, but it didn't have to be the same colors. So as long as the design was the same, I could do different color variations. So I did this same kind of bones thing, but an actual vinyl figure. Mm-hmm. And so I did, you know, black body, white bones, blue body, light blue bones, green body, yellow bone. I did like, I think I ended up doing, I divided that 500. Is it 500 or did I push it higher? I can't remember now. It's been a number of years, but that was my first kind of run at it. And I was able to do all the figures and the molds and everything for $5,000, which people are telling me $10,000 or $15,000, which it's funny. $5,000 is still a lot of money. And it took me time to save and put it away. Mm-hmm. And to tell my wife, I said, just let's take a flyer on this. Like, just, I believe in this. Here's the rally I'm getting around from people on social. I think I can sell these. And so she's like, yeah, let's do it. And I said, and then I promise you with the money I make, I'll put it back. I will borrow from the family and put it back. And she's like, well, you're borrowing from your, you know, bonus money you got from working at Link. It's like, she's like, you've earned this money. Go for it.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but I feel like if it's a flop that I've stolen from the family, like I had all this self-doubt, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also had this positive feeling about it because people were supportive online, different collectors and stuff. And, so I went for it and I launched my vinyl. So I'd done Barely in 2018 but I did my vinyl in 2019, November 2019 at Designer Con. I got an artist table and I did my first vinyl there. And I brought three colorways. One was I made an exclusive Decon colorway.
Yeah.
And then I sold not a ton, but I sold enough to make myself go, oh man, this is okay. This is great. Okay. And I said, I can probably go home and sell the rest online. And that wasn't the case. They kind of sat there for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I was saying, I was a big fan of Reese O'Brien.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
And I had done some little animations of his tiny ghost just as a fan. Mm-hmm. and posted or sent them to him and posted one or two online. And then one day I'm driving home from work and I get a message on Instagram from him that says, hey, I'd like to talk. And I was like, oh, shit. What did I do? Like, did I step across a line? Because no way in my mind was he contacting me or anything like creative related. And so I'm like, okay, I'm on my way home. Can I call you? And he's like, yeah. And we jump on the phone. He's like, dude, I love what you've been doing. I'd like you to come under the BIM toy umbrella and let's start, you know, making some toys together. And for me, that was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is a dude I look up to. I love his stuff and he wants to work together. And all it took was for him to post something on Instagram that we were going to work together. And those vinyls I had left went off. It's like I got a seal of approval from somebody that had, you know, his people, his followers were like, oh, well, we dig on. Well, they hadn't seen my stuff. They saw it because of him and they dug on it. And so I'll always be super grateful to Reese. It kind of feel like he kind of, you know, and he would tell me, he goes, I didn't do anything other than just like, hey, have you guys seen this over here? He's like, you did the work. And I was like, oh, I appreciate you saying that. But, and so then I got to work with them for a little bit, which kind of got weird when, COVID happened. Cause a lot of the plans we had and designs and things just didn't come together. Cause you know, COVID, and then BIMTOY ended up, closing down.
Yeah.
And, so I don't know if there's anything out of that you want me to talk about more or less, or
I mean, that's tough, right? You're working with BIMTOY and you're getting ready to fully do this. COVID happens, and I mean, you've had a huge success. You did the research, you did it well, where you went and did your own research and then went to someone else and offered that, which I think is the best way to do that, and say like, hey, this is what I found, what do you think? And then you're hitting all these successes, and then COVID kind of stalls out everything. So, I mean, COVID's going on. What's going through your head?
For me, it's just, it was a bit of a bummer. And the guys, you know, Reese and Joe and Arseny, those guys at Bottleneck Gallery, whereas Joe and Arseny, and they do a lot of really awesome stuff still. They do a lot of posters. There's a lot of collector community around, you know, limited edition posters, and they do that. They were working with Reese to do BIMTOY, and those guys are super solid guys, and they were really, you know, giving it their best. But I think there was just a lot of little factory hiccups and weird stuff going on. And then when COVID happened and a lot of production shut down, factories were like saying, yeah, we'll do your job. And then they would take your money to do your job. But then the big guys would come in and say, well, we want you to do 150,000 of these things. So they would shelf our job to do these big jobs, and our stuff just delayed and delayed and wasn't getting produced. And then when they would get back to it and go, oh yeah, shoot, we have to produce these for this small company, a smaller company, the quality was not great. So we'd send some stuff back. We'd keep some stuff. So I ended up releasing, I had three more colorways of my figure already in my hands that we released through their store. And then we had a couple that we did with them, a couple different versions of Barely. But then it just wasn't making sense to keep it going. There's factory issues. And like I said, they started pivoting to doing some resin stuff that Reese had been doing. I got to, I don't know if you're familiar with any of his Tiny Ghost stuff. But they, the Tiny Ghost that is resin, it's clear and it has a skeleton inside of it.
Yep.
I designed the bones for all that.
Awesome.
And so got to, that was a really honor and a kind of a dream job for me to get a collab on an actual figure with him.
Yeah.
Cause I'd been doing double cast bears for a while, and he's just like, I love that. I'm like, why don't we, you know, you should do some double cast stuff of Tiny Ghost. And then that kind of spun off, and you know, so we did, I think, three or four colorways. So I got to do that with him. But just the vinyl production stuff, they just kind of quit altogether. And then BIMTOY ended up kind of shutting down. And now Reese is doing, he's still doing his stuff, but found a release partner with Fugitive Toys. And he releases his stuff there, and he's just killing it and doing awesome stuff. And then, for me, when we shut down, I was like, oh man, okay, thanks COVID. You know, and this is now a couple years after after the start of it, but things just weren't how they had been. And I was like, what am I going to do? And pretty much the same day that BIMTOY closed down, Dustin over at Plastic Empire, they're a shop in Georgia, a lot of people know them. He has the toy Kong. They do some really cool stuff. He was the very first person I'd ever done an exclusive with. So when I was still in that window between me doing my initial releases of Barely, the Barely Dead vinyls, and getting together with Bimtoy, he got a hold of me and was like, let's do a Emerald City Comic Con exclusive. And I said, I actually have one that's green on green. And he goes, let's do it. And so Plastic Empire was the first shop that ever had an exclusive Barely figure.
Awesome.
And then, but because of my deal with Bimtoy, we weren't really doing any other exclusives. But Dustin stayed in contact. He's just a good dude. I really like him a lot. The day that Bimtoy announced they were closing, he reached out and was like, so does that mean we can do something? And I was like, really? You still want to do stuff? And that's, he's like, yeah, I've always loved the Barrelator. So it's like barely a Skeletor. And he goes, I'd love to do that as a vinyl. He's like, you know that, that he had talked to me about that years ago. And so, yeah, we talked about what that would look like to work together and to work on some projects. And so we started working together. Gosh, when was that? Was it January of 24, 23? I can't remember now. We got the ball rolling on that. And since then, we've released 5 colorways of the, we call Barrelator. And then recently we've released Barely as Krang from the Ninja Turtles. And
which is fantastic.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. It's really fun. I just, that's that nostalgia coming back around. And, you know, I was talk to people and say nostalgia is a powerful drug, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'll see it when we'll be at a convention or something, especially Decon. People will walk by not knowing anything about me or my toy company, but something pings in them in that nostalgia bone. And they're like, I don't know what this is, but I like it. Tell me more, you know, and it gets their attention. And then, and now with Dustin, we're getting ready to announce probably in the next day or so, our first Barely release. So the Krang and the Barrelator were new molds, but this is the shape of the original Barely. And we remade the Barely mold and we're doing figures on that mold, and we're releasing our first one next week. And and it's the first time I'm exploring the world of chase figures.
So
we've posted already on the Plastic Empire site. He showed it off on their live stream, but it's Barely as a certain Cape Crusader.
Okay.
And has like a gray and black as the mainline variant, and the chase is a blue and gray kind of shout out to Adam West, and look at for the chase. And so that's our first venture into doing more of these with chase figures, and we've got some really cool stuff coming up in the near future.
How does the chase, with these style of figures, how does the chase work? I'm assuming some kind of blind bag.
Yeah, they're all Barely figures come in a non-windowed box.
Great.
So these are my original boxes, but they're very similar in this style. And I have them without windows because I want you to take them out of the box. So amen. I intentionally did that so that people couldn't really leave them in the box or wouldn't be inclined to necessarily do that. And so it's blind. It's a limited edition of 100 for the figure. So they are a very small run. But so there's 100 of the figure, and then there's 25 chase. So 125 total.
Okay.
But they all have foot stamps on the bottom.
Yep.
That it'll be numbered. It'll say limited edition, 1 of 100, 2 of 100. And then it'll say chase edition, 1 of 25, 2 of 25, 3. So they'll all be individually numbered. So in all, there's 125 figures.
Yeah.
But there's 100 of the main figure and then chance at chase. So
that's a pretty good way. Like those are good odds.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a small run, but if you're in on it and, you know, you have a good odds of getting, you know, the chase or what have you.
Yeah. That's incredible. Can't wait to see those figures coming out.
Yeah.
And it's cool that you got to like these partnerships that you made kind of came full circle and came back around.
It's really been, I've been fortunate in that. I mean, it sounds corny in some ways and sounds elementary to say, you know, just do good things and good things come back to you and, you know, treat people well and they'll be inclined to treat you well. I feel like it attracts people. I mean, sometimes you get people who are out for their own self, but you can kind of see through that a lot of times. And just people will out themselves, I believe, over time. And I've been really fortunate to just, you know, I would have loved to do more stuff with Reese, but I felt like it was for a season, you know, that he gave so much of his time to me that I'll be forever grateful for. Probably every other week we would jump on a FaceTime call and he would just kind of informally mentor me and talk to me about just ways that I could hone my craft a little bit and come help me work on my design side mm-hmm. of things. Cause all the design part, illustration wise, like I studied for that certificate, it was very graphic design based. So you got a lot of color theory and layout, but not a lot of illustration, character mm-hmm. design development in that way. So he gave me some really just solid nuggets in that way that helped me think of my character and my world of mm-hmm. that Barely's in differently. And which was super just invaluable, and always be grateful to him for that and the time that he gave me there. And, you know, and now this partnership with Dustin, you know, he's been producing figures and helping artists produce figures. He works with, he helps distribute the Chomp stuff. So he's got a really cool pipeline for that. You know, he's working with 8PM and his Jimmy figure. He's got his own Kong figure, you know, so he is able to offer me tons of insight into, you know, drop schedules and distribution and working with factories. And they just, it's fortunate. Cause like, I think I said earlier, I'm doing this as it's a hobby turned small business, you know, and if I was doing this all on my own and, which I know a lot of people want to just have their hands on every bit of it. And for me, it was a realization that like, mm-hmm. I can have a voice into every part of it because it is my company and my brand, but I'm not a pro at all of this other stuff, you know? And I'm always quick to say, here's what I'm thinking, but what are your thoughts? You know, how do you feel about this? Because I know Dustin and his team, if I said, here's what I want to do and don't give any space, they would kind of be like, okay. And try to like stumble through it with me, but inviting them in, they're like, what if we did this? And what if we released it like this? And what about this colorway? And I'm like, I had never thought about that, you know, because especially Dustin owning a toy shop.
Yeah.
He hears the voice of the people, you know, like mm-hmm. people come into his shop all the time. Do you have this? You've seen this? What about this? And they talk about shows I've never heard of or things that are regaining popularity.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
And you know, he just helps me keep my eyes open to things that I might not have thought about. So it's really cool to do this kind of independently, but with a team. That makes any sense at all.
Yeah. I mean, I help people produce their Sifubi work and, nice. It's like it's almost problematic because like when I first did it, I was like, I want my hand on all of it,
mm-hmm.
like cutting flash from Sifubi, getting it painted, doing all those things. And then I realized I'm good. Like we can offload some of this stuff. But
now you have the understanding, though, right? That you by having your hands in it, you know what it takes and you know what you're looking for. So I think being involved at some level early on, now you know what you can offload or what is beneficial to have other people's look at and what you must have your hands on, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's then it's all learning, right? Every bit of this.
Yeah.
I mean, and now you're back at DesignerCon, right? We're back from COVID. Mm-hmm. You were in Vegas. How'd we feel about the move to Vegas from Anaheim?
My brain goes back and forth, you know, I felt like there was more space in the aisles, which was nice. People didn't feel as crammed in, mm-hmm. but it also felt like maybe that meant there was less vendors there.
Yeah.
But, the energy I felt was still good. Mm-hmm. I think you could tell people, I ran into a fair mix of people that had never been and went because it was new and came to their town, or they were in town for something else and were like, oh, there's a toy show going on.
Yeah.
You know, what is this? You know, I told my wife and some of my artist friends and collector friends, I said, I'm making up my mind to give it 2 years and withhold my judgment, for lack of a better term, until the second year. Because I feel like the first year is a rebuilding year. The second year might be a little bit of that. But like, you know, by the second year, I feel like I'll have a good feeling for what it is, you know. Yeah. But then it's also hard to, I can't see myself not going, because it's like going to summer camp, seeing your friends that you haven't seen all year, hanging out and having a good time and seeing new stuff I didn't know I needed to collect, you know. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, what's this? And who are you? What are you making? And you know, so even from that aspect, so maybe after this year, I won't vend for a year, but I'll still go. Like I just can't see not going. But
I mean, I've gone for the last like 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is. And I'm really close to Anaheim. So it's a dream. It was like driving up was an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And so the move was a bummer because the drive time now is like, what, 5-6 hours, something like that. Yeah. But instead I flew and I was in that morning and I flew out that night. And I think the flight cost me like $80. So it was like, there's a win, there's a loss, it all is. But I think you're right. Like, let's give it another year at least, see what's up. And I mean, there's other shows that are popping up now, which is so great. Like Collected Con is up and running, and Strange Cat Toys has got something going on over there. And so who knows?
Yeah, it's definitely, that's the thing I've been talking to my wife about more is, you know, cause this is such a, you know, I've got two young kids and a full-time job, and it seems to be like, just when I'm like, oh, I got, maybe I'll put some money over here to maybe go to New York Comic Con or go to here. It's like, my kid's like, I want to play this sport. I need braces, blah, blah, blah. You know? And I'm like, oh, well, next year. But she's like, she told me, she's like, maybe this year, it's not a next year. It's like, just do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at trying to go to Collected Con, figuring out how I would, you know, pack my stuff to get it there. You know, if I'm taking a bunch of resin, do I want to work risk shipping it? Do I want to pay for a carry-on? Do I want to drive to Chicago? Not really from Southern California, but you know, but trying to figure that stuff out. And Dustin at Plastic Empire is like, dude, well, let's release a figure at New York and just have you fly there, you know? And I'm like, I could swing that and then do a signing at the booth or do something. So I'm trying to get to more spots just to, and experience what's out there, you know? Cause right now, like since 2019, I've been vending at DesignerCon. I did the online show during COVID. And I went back, you know, every year since they started doing it in person again. And yeah, I'm same as you. I'm an hour and a half from Anaheim, but the other side. So that drive to Vegas it felt like it was going to be a killer, but you know, I just try to look at it from the positive side of like, I want some more time to chit chat with my wife and just, you know, hang out together with her. But, yeah, it was good. It was a good show. And, it was, fun to, cause usually we're like, oh, well then after the show, we'll go eat here and then we'll do this. And the next day we'll eat at this. We had that. We made a routine. Mm-hmm. Now we're in Vegas. We're like, oh, we have to figure out all new stuff to do and see what's out there, which was fun, you know, to kind of see a city. And when I've gone to Vegas, I've always been on the other side of town for the most part. So to be down on that side and walk around and see different stuff, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's next for Barely Available?
Sure. Well, I'm just, you know, staying motivated is, a lot of times hinges on like, what different can I do or what new spin can I put on stuff helps me be motivated. Also trying to not, get in the rut of going, well, I've got vinyls coming now, so I can just chill a little bit. I want to still do some more, get back in the resin casting. I've had the privilege to work with Paul at Mile High here in the US.
He's cool.
I enjoy that guy. I have this is one of my other figures. It's called Kaiju Mame. I don't have any of the vinyls in here, but these were the resins I started with.
Awesome.
So it's like my take on a little kaiju. I've actually done three different figures in resin of these kaiju at this 4-inch size.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul helped me do a 6-inch of the vinyl. And so I've done 11 releases of those, 11 colorways.
Mm-hmm.
And they've always been probably about just 5 or 6 pieces, like real small. You know, but sold those. I don't want to let that guy die. And, cause fun of it, part of it that's fun is I get those in and I get to trim, like you were saying, trim the vinyl. Mm-hmm. I've got, I think 8 or 9, paint masks to, for that figure. And so I get to get out in the garage and airbrush and paint, do some of that stuff. I do want to explore getting some other artists to maybe try their hand at painting it and do maybe a custom show. Then I've got a couple figures, and then Paul's also been working with me on, I also have a version of Barry that's seated. It's the same scale as this guy, but he's just sitting down. And, but what I did is I shrunk him down to 3-inch and I think 2 1/4, and was doing blind boxes. So I did my first release of blind boxes at Decon, and those sold out. And so I'm just trying to do different, you know, different sets of those and trying, you know, some of that. But that's a lot of vinyl trimming and painting, but, you know, when I'm like, I'm going to do a 200 piece set and do all these colors in the set. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, it about killed me doing 50 pieces. Now I'm trying to do 200. I'm like, that's going to take me forever, but
yeah,
it's a fun challenge, you know, and there's something meditative about it in some regard. So, but yeah, I'm just going to keep at it. I don't know. I'm really excited about all these vinyls that we've got coming. We've got some fun stuff coming. Like I said, a release this next week. It'll be our first Chase figure release. Then we've got a couple more Krang colorways coming, and got talking about something fun possibly for C2E2 in April releasing. Yeah. And just getting that stuff in from overseas. We put in a lot of work over the past 6 or 8 months, getting a lot of design samples approved and stuff, and then now waiting for that stuff to make it on a boat over here is fun. It's like a really long wait for Christmas kind of feeling, you know.
Yeah,
stuff to get here, but
the whole approval process sucks. It's like I admire what they do, and like they like, oh, approve the wax, approve the mold, approve. And it's just like, there's something in me that wants to just say, approve all, like, just go do it.
Just get it.
I know if I do that, something's going to get messed up.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. And I know inevitably for me, you know, doing this stuff, cause I'm, designing the figure, doing the turnarounds, all the color call outs, then I'm designing the boxes. I'm inevitably misspelling something on the box.
Yep.
You know, so that's been what's been great for me as a doing this kind of on my own is now having with Dustin's team saying, these are the places I need a proofreader. Is there anyone on your team that can proofread, be a fresh set of eyes? Tell me if I'm, you know, off my rocker thinking this is a good colorway for this, you know, and getting that feedback, because designing in a vacuum, you know, you're just like, well, hope it's good. And so getting that feedback has been great. And also just big shout out to the community, because I've built some really good friends. Some of them, you know, I never met until I went to a Decon in person, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, like we feel like we're super close. And then, you know, we'd never met until the con, but having that circle of people that you can say, okay, you know, mum's the word, but here's what I'm thinking of releasing. What do you think? Give me your thoughts. And finding trusted people like that. And like I said, there's great people. And getting involved too with the, I don't know if you're familiar with the creatives, the trading cards, you know, getting involved in that community. I was in series one of those trading cards, Red Guardian. He's such a good dude. And he's a real good, in the best possible way, gatekeeper of the community and a healthy community there. So I've just been able to really find good collecting community and art community and that stuff, and meeting people. And I just love it. And I love doing stuff like this. I really appreciate you reaching out because, you know, I mean, enjoying talking to you. But there's audiences of people that I've never come in contact with and don't know my stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just try to balance, like, you know, on one hand, I look at my Instagram and go, well, okay, there's X amount of people following me. Am I done? Or is, you know, no, there's people that have no idea who I am, you know? And I want to meet those people because the whole reason I got into doing art was to just spread joy, I guess, is the simplest way to say it, you know, do stuff that, like, when somebody sees it and I get to see this at cons, they walk by, even if they don't buy and they stop for a second, smile, and they're like, I like that. I'm like, thanks. You know, that makes my day. I mean, yes, I like when they exchange some money for that thing they like, that helps yeah. me too. But there's just some, that positivity from it and knowing that you help them remember a fond memory from their childhood or just gave them a chuckle at something. You know, one of my Bearlies, it's one of my favorites I did, was this look like a brown bear wearing jeans and an orange t-shirt. And on the t-shirt, it said I, and then it had like a piece of poop in the woods. Mm-hmm. So we called it poop in the woods, barely. But it was like this, you know, because the joke, people say the bears shit in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, and so we had this one and people walk by it and just crack up, you know. And I have this illustration, this poster limited edition print we did where it was barely as He-Man fighting Skeletor, you know, and they're in a big battle, but people are like laughing and going, oh, that's great. And one guy's like, he goes, I mean this in the best way, but I hung that over my toilet. So every time somebody goes to go to the bathroom, they just come out cracking up at this illustration. I'm like, great. I love that it's hanging over someone's toilet and making yeah. people laugh, right? And those stories are just invaluable. The things to get to hear and stuff is so fun.
That's amazing. Hey, it has been so good having you on today.
Oh, and thanks, man.
Means the world. So thank you so much.
Sure.
Anytime.
Yeah.
The last part of the podcast is just made up so you can plug where people can find you and sure. buy your work. So plug away.
Sure. I appreciate that. Like I said, on Instagram, it's barely available. My website is barelyavailable.com. I have, you know, every once in a while I'll throw up random apparel on there and resin casts and things like that. A lot of my stuff I'll stream. Lately, I've been streaming on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Trying to do at least every other Thursday, and it's barely available, and I'll bring resin pieces there to sell to the community. We'll do little you know, everybody throws their name in a hat and I'll do a random generator and give first right to grab it to someone on there, so kind of gives a fair shot to everyone that's in there. And then you know, like, I'll drop stuff on my website, and then keep an eye on Plastic Empire because they're releasing my vinyls. They're a really good crew there. They've got tons of great stuff. On top of that, with other designer toys, Dustin's super great at supporting the designer community as well as, you know, the mainline community, Unco and Figpen and all that stuff. But yeah, so barely available. Odds are if you're on a platform and look that up, you'll find me.
Heck yeah. Dude, thank you again for coming on.
Anytime. Thanks so much for having me.